Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Would you please welcome to the stage Chris Yerga.
Thank you very much. There's actually three of us on stage. So I'm joined here with my partners in crime here, Ellie Powers, who's the lead program manager for the Google Play. Well, we'll get into that later. And Miles Barr, who runs the engineering team. So I want to talk to you today about Android apps in Google Play. So I'm the engineering director for the Google Play team, and it's my job to make sure that every year there's more and more opportunities for you as developers to build a successful business selling your apps in the Play Store. Now, I want to start by saying thank you. Thank you for building incredible apps and games in the Play Store. Thank you for helping the Google Play Store and the Android platform become the fastest growing mobile platform around. And thank you for delighting hundreds of millions of users with your products. Mobile apps have gotten to this point where they've become intertwined in our lives in a very meaningful way. And I had actually written this intro the other day. And then just a few hours ago, I had an experience that really underlined it for me. I was up on stage. I had the privilege to be part of the keynote this morning. And so I talked a bit about Google Play and all the great stuff that we were launching today. And then I had a moment when I had to step off stage when Hugo got to announce the Nexus 7 tablet. So I was sitting off of my chair on the side of the stage there and listening to Hugo. And, candidly, we'd rehearsed that presentation numerous times before, so the content was a little old to me. And all of a sudden, I discovered this wasn't even a conscious thing. I had my phone in my hand, and what I was doing is I was playing a game that I had just downloaded. And so I had recently gone to Japan and got this insane game. I don't know if anyone here is familiar with it, called Mushroom Garden, where the game is you grow mushrooms. It's exactly what it says on the tin. There's really nothing more to it. But it's really oddly compelling because you have to check back to see if you're getting these rare mushrooms. And so I was playing this game, and I thought, this is not a rational thing to be doing. Like, I'm in the middle of this keynote presentation. There's 6,000 people in the room, and I'm playing this game. But what it reminded me of is the fact that I think, the best kind of entertainment or the best kinds of products permeate your life in that way, where they just become a part of your behavior, and it's almost like second thought. And these applications, they're not just getting installed into our devices. They're becoming a part of our lives and our daily existence. And that, combined with the astounding growth of Android and the crazy numbers of Android activations, presents a huge opportunity for you as developers. So today we're going to talk about what it takes to grow your business. And in order to have a successful business, there's really three things that you need. First is, obviously, you need customers. You need people who are coming to your products, and then you need revenue. You need some means of monetizing those customers and turning that into revenue for your business. And the final thing that you need is data and insight into how your business is operating so that you can optimize your business and the way that you're conducting things to sort of create this virtuous cycle that then folds back to the beginning to help you get more customers and more revenue. We're going to be deep diving into each one of these areas a bit today. And let's start off talking about customers. So in the Google Play team, we think about customers on sort of two axes. So the first one is that, obviously, we want to be bringing an ever-increasing number of customers into the front door of the Google Play Store. But on the other axis, we also want to be driving ever-increasing engagement with these customers. So what do I mean by that? So engagement means giving customers more reasons to come to the store, more reasons to keep coming back, giving them a delightful experience when they use the store and make a purchase so that they're happy, they become regular customers and trusting in the Google Play Store, and you create sort of a lifelong relationship with them and value. And if you think about, one of the primary drivers of bringing an ever-increasing number of customers to the store certainly has to be the astounding rate of Android device activations. As we talked about at the keynote today, A year ago, we were at 100 million devices. Now we're at 400 million total devices activated. I mean, these are just crazy numbers. 1 million devices a day are being activated. That's a device for every person in the city of San Francisco, where we're here today, every single day. These are just crazy numbers. And each one of these users is basically a potential customer of your apps and games. And the other most meaningful thing that we've done in the last year is the release of the Google Play brand. So, to consumers, Google Play means all of your digital content, apps, games, music, books, movies, and now magazines and TV, available across your devices and on the web. And so you might, rightly ask yourself, well, so what does this mean to me as an application developer? Well, by bringing all of these content types together, we did so in a couple ways. The first is we put everything under a single brand, but we also brought all these content types together in a single store. And so the more content types that we launch, the more reasons people have to come to the store, the more reasons they have to come back. And one of the things that we've noticed is that with each new content type that we launch, there's additional people who come to the store and maybe even make their first purchase from one of these content types. So, certainly many people make their first purchase as an app or game. But, when we launch music or launch books, these people come in, they get over that hump of making their first purchase, and every time they come in the front door of our store, we're merchandising the full swath of everything we have, including apps and games, to them. You're getting an opportunity to put your products in front of these users. And the more different types of content that our users are purchasing, the more engaged a customer of ours they become. And so they have more and more reasons to frequently come back to the store, and we create a deeper relationship with them. Now, the other thing that's important about Google Play is that it's a Google-wide brand. So by bringing all this stuff together, we have the opportunity to bring the full weight of Google's resources behind the store in a couple different areas. Promotions, marketing, driving customer awareness, et cetera. One simple but pretty concrete example of this is the fact that we're now present in the universal navigation bar up here that's at the top of all of Google's web properties. And so this not only gives users sort of a quick one-click access to the Google Play Store, but what we've also seen is that for many users, this is driving the first time they've ever visited the web store. So, we have a lot of people who use the device store on a fairly regular basis, but this is driving awareness and giving them yet another opportunity to come to the store, maybe when they're engaged with their desktop computer or laptop rather than their mobile device. The other thing that's important here is that by bringing all this content together into sort of a single umbrella brand, it enables us to much more effectively do marketing and promotion. So when we launched the Google Play brand, we did this promotion across all the content types with deeply discounted content, 25-cent apps. It was very successful in not only driving increased app sales of the things that were on sale, as well as actually things that weren't part of the promotion, but also driving a higher rate of people making their first purchase from the Google Play Store. And more recently, we've tried to do some, more creative things. Last week, we did this Play with Collectibles promotion, where we had a variety of in-game items that were available in the Play Store for a limited time basis across a variety of different games. And I think this is, we're starting to see the first sort of creative different ways that we're trying to experiment with marketing and promotions here. I can't really say too much about our future plans, but what I'll tell you is this. Google Play is hugely important for Google. It's a very strategic thing for us. We want to, we have a great brand. We have amazing apps and games that you all have built. I mean, if you think back to, when I actually joined the team just under 2 years ago, like the progress that we've made in terms of quality of apps and games is just astounding. So we have something that's really special, really strategically important to us. So we're going to shout it from the rooftops. We're going to make a big splash about Google Play. Your grandparents are going to know about it. Your friends on other platforms are going to know about it. And so we're going to continue to do a lot more in terms of marketing and promotion to bring more people into the store. So, is that working? Well, we announced some pretty great numbers today. 20 billion total app downloads in the store. 1.5 billion apps being downloaded per month out of 600,000 apps. So basically on any metric that we can measure, the store is continuing to grow at a very fast pace. And the users who are driving that growth are increasingly global in nature. So Google Play apps and games are available in 190 countries and territories. 132 of those support paid applications. We continue to make investments there, trying to close that gap and offer paid apps in new places where we can. But in terms of the global footprint of Android users, we have 92% coverage. So 92% of those folks have access to paid apps. And so I think, you know, one of the first takeaways for you all is just really thinking about the global opportunity for Android apps. In the Google Play Store, you want to really make sure that you're, you know, thinking about how to reach customers in a variety of different geographies, a variety of different languages, to really take advantage of the full market opportunity here. Now, we talked about an amazing number of device activations, but not all devices are alike. And with the Nexus 7 tablet, what we aspired to do was to produce a tablet that, or an Android device, maybe in the more generic sense, that really sets the goalposts for what a device that contemplates Google Play at its core could be. From the moment you turn on the tablet, and I think everyone here is going to be turning on a tablet pretty darn soon here, right? So that's pretty awesome. I had nothing to do with it, but feel free to applaud. As soon as you turn it on, you're immediately, as soon as you come out of the setup wizard, the very first thing you see is your content library. The other thing that we're doing here that's pretty novel is when you activate the device and create a wallet account, you're given a $25 in store credit for the Google Play Store so that you can immediately go in and start buying things from the store. And the intention here is to capture people at that magic moment. So you know how it is, right? You get a new device, you're all amped up about it, like, oh, this thing's really cool. You want to install, like, the latest game on it to show off your hardware. You want to trick it out with, you know, live wallpaper and widgets and stuff like that. And so we want to get people right at that magic moment, give them a direct on-ramp to the store, give them some money to spend to create those sort of habits so that they become a lifelong user. I think the other thing that's important here is that we also pre-provision content on this device. So when you turn on your device and activate it, you know, you get a movie to watch, you get some magazines and a book to read and things like that, so that you can really understand what that experience is like, so that you understand the value, you're more willing to make a purchase when you get into the store. So a variety of ways that we're bringing customers to the store and trying to deepen our engagement with them to keep them coming back and give them more reasons to come. The next bit of this, obviously, is revenue, so monetizing these customers. And so in terms of revenue, we think of this in sort of two categories. So first is thinking about it from the user point of view. We want to give users flexible ways to pay. And then for you as developers, we want to give you flexible ways to monetize your applications. From the user point of view, a few things we've done. So credit and debit cards, you know, clearly continue to be a very popular way for people to buy apps. With the new setup wizard that we've done in Jelly Bean, we've also made it easy for users to create a wallet account and set up a credit or debit card at that moment when you're setting up the device and you're kind of, you're in that mode of like, okay, I got to configure everything and get everything set up. And so it's it reduces friction for people purchasing things in the store afterwards. Obviously, credit cards aren't popular everywhere in the world. So in order to address some other markets, we've also been aggressively working on carrier billing as a means to give people a way to pay. And then, as I mentioned, the Google Play balance as yet another thing that we're rolling out. For you as developers, certainly, you know, a variety of ways to monetize your apps and ways that are increasing, you know, ad-funded and paid apps continue to be, you know, very popular and viable ways to monetize your apps. In-app billing has been a huge success for us. We'll be talking about that in some greater detail. But subscriptions is kind of like, the way I think of subscriptions is sort of like the next wave of in-app billing. It's an opportunity to create a recurring revenue relationship with your customers, new business models. So you're going to hear this. I'm going to say this time and time again. We're going to talk about international. International markets really is where a lot of the growth is happening, and international markets are key to revenue growth. So fully two-thirds of Google Play revenue is coming from outside the U.S. And now the United States remains the largest single country where Android devices are being activated on a daily basis. However, in aggregate, there's more devices being activated outside the U.S. on a daily basis than inside. And you can look here. We've listed some of the top markets for paid apps. And even when you just limit this to the top five, you're already spanning the Americas, Europe, and Asia. So really want to be thinking about international for monetizing your apps. And I want to start off here and talk a little bit about an international success story. So between April of 2011 and April of this year, revenue in Japan and Korea increased 14x. 14 times. That's crazy growth. Now, what happened during that period of time that accounts for this? Well, certainly we activated quite a lot of Android devices in those regions during that time, so that's responsible for some of it. And certainly there was a lot of, you know, really compelling apps that were built and released. But what really made this happen is this almost magic combination of direct carrier billing and in-app billing. And so we're going to talk a little bit about how that works. So in Japan and Korea, you know, credit cards aren't necessarily, you know, the predominant way that people are used to buying things. And, you know, actually I should go further than that and say that people actually expect to be able to purchase things using their phone in these regions. And so we've really aggressively gone after carrier billing deployments to enable that. And we've gotten to a point now where I'm very happy to say that in Japan and Korea, fully 95% of Google Play users in Japan and Korea are on a mobile network that offers carrier billing with Google Play. Carrier billing, Europe and the United States, et cetera, it's been wildly popular. It's just such a frictionless way to purchase things. It's actually the way that I actually purchase content myself. So worldwide, globally, fully 73% of Google Play app purchases are made with carrier billing when it's available. So if it's available to users, they predominantly choose that as a form of payment. We've made some pretty significant investments in carrier billing this year, launched with a number of new carriers across a number of countries. And you can see the list of countries that's available here. We're going to continue to really aggressively push this. Google Play is the largest app store that supports direct carrier billing, and we see it as one of the huge growth prospects for bringing more revenue to the store. So carrier billing launching in Japan and Korea as part of that success story, every time we would deploy a new carrier in one of those regions, we would see these like giant jumps in revenue. So there's this like built-up, you know, pent-up demand there that we were unlocking with each of these launches. But then the other thing that turned out to be super popular in these regions was freemium business model games that leveraged in-app purchases. So in-app purchasing has been a huge breakout success for Google Play, both for developers and users have really embraced it as well. The thing that I really like about in-app purchasing is it's one of these things where it's kind of like a fundamental enabling piece of infrastructure, right? So we give you guys this, you know, relatively simple API. What it allows you to do is to, you know, make direct charges from within your apps to users. But you've taken that and used it in some incredibly creative ways to figure out a wide variety of different ways to monetize your apps. So, you know, there's the tried and true things like, you know, in-app currency or, you know, collectibles or items in games, or maybe unlocking, you know, premium features in an application, et cetera. But we've also seen some other really creative things, like people do time-limited offers. One developer did this thing where you download the free game, and like within the first 15 or 30 minutes, like long enough that the user understands what the gameplay is and probably has a pretty good sense of what the value of the game is, they offer them a discount. Like, you can unlock the game this one time for a discounted rate. We've seen a lot of various creative applications of in-app purchasing. One specific case study here is from TinyCo. So they implemented our in-app billing API, and they also did something else that's really important here, which is timely and kind of frequent content updates, right? So you're not only selling things to your users, but by keeping the content fresh, you give your users more reasons to keep coming back to your game and more things to purchase, once again sort of deepening your engagement with those users. They implemented virtual currency in their app via in-app billing, and in their own words here from Suli Ali, the CEO, they said that Google Play has the highest average revenue per paying user of all app stores. This and other Android metrics makes us, once again, their words, Android zealots, which we obviously love to hear. So that's in-app billing. That kind of brings us today. And so, as I said, the next wave of this is subscriptions. And so the point I want to get across to you here is to think broadly about what subscriptions can mean for you. It would be kind of easy to fall into a trap and say, well, yeah, subscriptions, that's for, like, you know, maybe a newspaper or a comic book app or something where there's some, you know, periodic timed content that's coming through. But you should really think broadly about what recurring value you can deliver to users that they'd be willing to pay and engage in a subscription with you for. I mean, think about it this way. Every in-app conversion you do, right, that's this opportunity you get where the user has said, okay, I'm really enjoying this experience. There's some value here I'm willing to pay for. If you could convert that instant into a recurring revenue opportunity with that user, you're more deeply engaged with that user. You have, you know, not only a relationship with them, but an ongoing revenue stream. That's a very powerful thing. And so as an example of maybe some, you know, broad ways to think about subscriptions, one of our launch partners is Glue, and they've used subscriptions in an interesting way. They implement this thing you can see up here that's like these VIP gold and silver packages. And what that does is it gives you Glue credits that you can spend in the game and some other premium features. But the interesting thing is that it does that across a portfolio of their games. So no matter what game you purchase the subscription for, you get the benefits of that subscription across a suite of their different games. And so the cool thing about that is now you're kind of building this relationship with the user where they're kind of invested in your games, right? And so maybe they're going to try other games or other applications that you have where they might not have otherwise done so. The CEO of Glue has this to say, that their subscriptions-based VIP club continues to grow in popularity as gamers take advantage of significant bonus value and the easy sign-up process offered on Google Play. So think hard about how you can make subscriptions work for you in creative ways as well. So the last portion of this segment is optimization. Optimization is all about getting insight into your business, understanding, you know, metrics and analysis so that you have some sort of hard data to figure out how to optimize things, and also optimizing delivery and distribution of your applications. So the first thing we've done here is we've actually put a considerable amount of work into the Google Play Developer Console. We revamped all the statistics and analytics and reporting stuff over the past year. So you can now get installation data for a variety of metrics broken down across a number of dimensions. So, for example, you can look at your user installs and slice and dice it by geography or carrier or version of the Android platform that these devices are running, etc. We've got nice, you know, reports and visualization stuff here in the developer console, and you can also export the data to use as you see fit offline. So that's very useful in terms of like analyzing your acquisition funnel, right? Figuring out how people are getting your games, how they're downloading it, where they're coming from, what geographies they're popular in. Might also be kind of a useful early indicator to figure out what international languages you should target for localization. But what about once they're actually in your application, then what happens? And so Google Analytics is the bit that answers these questions. You can integrate with Google Analytics and answer questions like, how frequently are users running my app? Are they running it, you know, once a week or 10 times a day? What are they doing when they're inside the application? What features are they using or not using? Or even more interesting, users that end up performing in-app purchases, what are their behavior patterns? How do they get to the in-app purchase completion, et cetera? If you haven't yet integrated with Google Analytics, you're missing a pretty good opportunity to get some really detailed insights into how your application is performing. If you're interested, they have an SDK for Android, makes it fairly straightforward to integrate with, and there's a deep dive session that the analytics team is running elsewhere at I.O. So we're also bringing insights and metrics for some of the other services that surround Google Play. So we announced Google Cloud Messaging today. So this is, you know, the expansion of the Android Cloud to device messaging, adds new features, and is now out of beta and completely open and free with no quota for all developers. And we've integrated statistics and analytics from Google Cloud Messaging directly into the Google Play Developer Console. So you can you know, see metrics about how many messages are being sent, and once again, slice and dice this across, you know, different things like, you know, carrier or, you know, geography and things of this nature. Now, with all these additional features coming to the Google Play Dev Console, chances are that if you have an organization of any size, there's probably going to be multiple people in that organization that want to have access to it. So we've added a feature called multiple user accounts that allows you to invite other people to view your Google Play Developer Console. You can also set some access controls to control who can see the financial and sales information versus just administer the apps and things like that. You can, as the administrator, you can add and remove access, etc. Now, the next part gets to distributing your applications. So we've done a variety of things to help here, APK expansion files being one of the more recent ones. So prior to APK expansion files, you'll remember there's a limit of 50 megabytes for an APK. And with, you know, increasing screen sizes and pixel densities, particularly for, you know, graphically rich games, it simply wasn't enough. And so a lot of developers had to implement their own sort of secondary download system. With APK expansion files, we now take care of that for you. So you can add up to 2 gigabyte expansion files, and we not only host and deliver those files for you, which means that you don't have to, you have to neither invest the engineering resources to implement that nor incur the costs of hosting and bandwidth to distribute them. But it also gives a much more integrated experience for users. So we have a case study here from Glue where before APK expansion file support came to Google Play, they were losing a considerable number of their customers from the point where they downloaded the APK, but they hadn't completed the secondary download. And so what that turns into is kind of, you know, dissatisfied customers. You download the app, you want to play it, and now I've got this secondary download. With APK expansion files, those customers are more satisfied, and Glue is happy too, because we're paying for the downloads and the hosting, and they've closed the gap on their conversion rate to 96% from the previous stats. The other thing we announced today is smart app updates. Pretty simple, right? Instead of downloading an entire APK, you download a patch file. We do all the work behind the scenes for you. You really simply don't have to do anything except upload an updated version of your APK. Users download just the changes, and on average, from the analysis we've done, they tend to be about a third the size of a full app update. We also heard that you wanted to engage more deeply with your users. Reviews is an excellent way to do that. And so we started the rollout of this new feature we call Developer Reply to Review. So with Developer Reply to Review, you'll be able to actually respond to a review in a way that shows up right there on Google Play. And also you can engage with users. They get an email notification. And it's a great way to not only kind of close the loop on feedback, like maybe a user's having problems, you want some additional information for them, et cetera. We're initially rolling this out to our top developer group, and we'll be expanding this in the future. The final thing here is the all-new developer.android.com. We've just rolled it out to kind of take a broader look at what it means to develop an Android app. It's beyond just engineering. There's design resources there, and we also talk about distribution and other aspects of having a successful app business. Whether you're a brand new developer starting out and you want to kind of get a jump start and look at some of the free training there, or maybe even an experienced developer want to learn more about some of the newest APIs that are being released, developer.android.com is the place to go for that. So we put a fair amount of investment into the Google Play Dev Console over the past year, and we've seen some of the things today, but we feel like we can do a heck of a lot better with it. And what I'd like to do now is invite up two people who've already made it better. Ellie and Miles are going to give you a demo right now.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ellie Powers. I'm the product manager for Google app developers in Google Play.
Hi, I'm Miles Barr. I'm the engineering manager for the Google Play Developer Console.
So as Chris mentioned, all of you Android app developers have already loaded over 600,000 apps into Google Play. That is astounding, and thank you for that very much. So now that your businesses are really growing, 20 billion downloads, you're going to need a lot better tools to run your businesses properly. So we started talking to Android app developers everywhere, big businesses, small businesses, and we said, tell us, what are your biggest pain points? What we heard was basically two major things. First of all, app publishing in the developer console was not as smooth as it should be, not even close. And secondly, with a real modern e-commerce business, you need much, much better tools that give you not just data about your users, but real insight into your businesses. So one developer we spoke to said, we use this site so much. It's so critical to our business. Do we use it every day? Not just that. We're actually in the tool all day, every day, constantly tweaking our offerings. So with that, we said, we could fix a few things here and there, you know, try to make some small improvements. But, you know, that just wasn't going to work. No way. So we went completely back to the drawing board, and we said, let's revamp app publishing completely, and let's build a real foundation that can become the future of what we want to offer Android app developers and Google Play to manage their businesses. So we're very happy to announce today that the Google Play Developer Console, a brand new one, is in limited beta. We would love to have you check it out very soon and let us know what you think. Your feedback is really crucial to making sure that it really fits the way your business runs. So let's have a look at it. Miles? All right, so there it is. There's really not much to see at first because we don't have any apps yet, but you'll immediately notice that we have a brand new look and feel. It's a lot easier to see where you are in the site, and it's a lot easier to navigate anywhere that you need to go. So, to show you the brand new app publishing experience, what would make more sense than to just actually publish a brand new app into Google Play right now from the stage at I/O? So let's do that. Okay, so we wrote a simple little app. It's called the Handy Developer Guide, and we're going to publish it today. One of the key things you told us was that when you're publishing a new app, you need to be able to do it piece by piece. Sometimes you might have the APK, but you don't have the text. Other times you might have some of the graphics ready, but not the APK. So don't worry, that's not going to be a problem anymore. You can get started with whatever you have. Thank you. We really want to take your feedback. Seriously, guys. Okay, so here today, we do have an APK on hand. I wrote it my very self. It's not the best one, but it's great for our demo. So Miles is going to go ahead and upload it. All right, there we go, the developer guide. So once this is done uploading, we're going to be able to review key details of this app. You know, things like what API level is it using, how many languages does it support, what screen resolutions, and so on. So let's give it a good look just to make sure we've gotten everything right. Okay, I think that looks pretty good. There's definitely a lot of devices supported, so I'm happy with that. So another big piece of feedback that we heard was, well, this form, it's just this big form, and I really can't tell where I am. Is my app published? Is it not? What parts do I still have left to do? It was confusing, really. So we tried to fix all that. At any point, you can just look in the upper right-hand corner of the screen. You can clearly see that this is in a draft state. It has not been published yet. And if we're not sure what we still need to do, we can just click there at any time, and it'll give us a list of this is what you need to do to publish your app. So we can see from the check mark that this APK, totally fine. We're all set. It's time to move on to the store listing. Okay, so Miles is going to quickly enter a description of this little app. It doesn't do very much, so it shouldn't take him too long. One important thing that Chris mentioned is all of the international growth. It is huge. It is really astounding. And it's really a priority to make sure that each one of your businesses, no matter where in the world you are based, that you are able to reach users all over the world. Users who speak many different languages, users you've never met before, your business should be able to expand to them. Two-thirds of the revenue is outside the country of the U.S., and your businesses should be as well. So, we recently just launched the Play Store on the web into an additional 22 languages. You may recognize many of them, everything from UK English all the way down to, you know, other ones like, what else did we launch? I think we even launched Zulu. Yes, it was Zulu. So, for our little demo today, we're going to add Korean. Chris definitely made a great case study with that 14x growth. So Miles is just going to go ahead and add a nice little translation in Korean. Okay, let's put Handy Developer Guide in Korean.
One problem. I don't speak Korean.
Oh, me neither.
Ah, okay.
All okay.
Right, stuck.
What should we do?
How about we get rid of Korean and let's just rely on the auto-translate feature.
Yes, that's a great idea. So one of the things that we had heard from users is, hey, I may not speak a language where a certain developer has provided a human translation already, but I still want to learn about that app. So with Google, here we have Google Translate, right? So how can we put that to work for you and for your users? Well, what will happen with automated translations is a user who goes to the Play Store will be able to see either the original language that you've provided or an automated translation in their native language. And to keep this updated properly, you don't have to do anything at all. The automated translation updates anytime you update your translation. Okay, so until Miles or I finish our Korean lessons, we're just going to let automated translations do its job. So let's move on to the funnest part, screenshots. Okay, so for our basic app, we're just going to do the minimum, 2 screenshots of the app. And this is really not the best practice. Yes. As you can see here, we have a great graphic designer who's made us some fantastic graphics to promote the app. Now, if this were a real app that we were actually going to have a great success on, we need to do a couple of things. You know, we could have a screenshot of the app running on the new Nexus 7 tablet. That would be fantastic, especially if there are tablet-specific features. A user can really see, yes, if I load this onto my tablet, if I install it, maybe I'm willing to pay even a little bit more because I know that the tablet version is going to be so great. Another real important thing that we want to mention here is the feature graphic. So when you make your store listing on the web, the main center point of it is the feature graphic. It's the big banner that users see when they go there. So you definitely want to have it there. And if our editorial team is looking to feature your app, which I think we would all like to have, a feature graphic is absolutely a must-have. So, okay, Miles, are we all set there? Okay, one more thing that a lot of top developers mentioned to us is they said, okay, how do I take my listening to the next level of professionalism? I actually need a video. And especially if you're working on a really novel app that does something really interesting and different. Nothing like a video really explains to a user, hey, when you get the app on your phone, do this, here's why it's cool, here's how you use it, it's really fun, definitely recommend a video there as well. So it's pretty clear at this point that one of the key themes is, the better that you can communicate with your users about the value of your app, the better off you're going to be. So along that theme, earlier this year, we introduced privacy policy URLs. So for the past couple of months, you've been able to go into the developer console and enter a privacy policy URL for each app that you have, should you wish to do so. And as of today, for users browsing Google Play, those privacy policy URLs will now be visible. So this is a great way for users to evaluate your apps in Google Play. All right, looks like we're at the bottom of the page. We're going to scroll up. We're going to save. Okay. So our last step is going to be pricing and distribution. This is a really simple app, so we're going to make it available for free. I wouldn't pay for it. And distribute it everywhere. We're also going to agree to the policies. Definitely have a look through these if you haven't done so recently, just to make sure that you're aware of how all the rules go. Okay, how are we doing? Wow, ready to publish.
All right.
That's cool.
Let's publish this.
Okay, we'll do it. So, this is a real thing happening. We are actually sending our app off into the Google Play Store. After we do this, you'll really be able to download your app onto your very own phone or tablet, try it out, have a look, and there we go.
Actually, Ellie, I think I uploaded the wrong APK for this app.
Are you serious?
I know. I'm sorry.
Come on, we're on stage.
Okay.
All right. Are we going to fix this?
All right. Let's upload the proper version.
Okay. Well, okay. So Miles is going to upload this new version. All right. Let's have a look. We're actually going to see the cool comparison right now.
Oh, hang on. There's 23 devices have been removed.
Why is that? That's not good.
Bluetooth. Why does a set of links need Bluetooth?
I don't know. I must have pasted that into the wrong app when I was updating my app this morning. Okay, this app is obviously a bad version.
Okay, let's just get rid of it then.
Okay, so we have heard from developers that exactly that has happened, and with the new comparisons tool, we'll make sure that you never do an oopsies update again. All right, so here we go. We published our app. While we're waiting for it to actually show up in the store, let's look at some stats from an existing app that we have. Okay, so a lot of you said that the current developer console is too slow. Does anyone here have a lot of apps, like 100 or maybe 1,000 or maybe 10,000? It gets really slow. So with the new search box, you can jump exactly to the one that you want, and the whole site runs a lot faster. As Chris mentioned, we update the statistics this year. You can see a lot of great data about your user installs, upgrades, everything like that. You can break it down by these six dimensions, export it, do more analysis. It's really handy. So most of you are probably familiar with this already. Okay, and let's have a look at the reviews. Here's what it looks like in the new site. Earlier this year, we introduced the ability to see your app version, your device, and the language from each of the reviews that users are leaving. I like to use this all the time to understand who are these people giving me one star, what do they have in common, and how can I try to make them a bit happier. Okay, and if Miles and I were top developers, which we're not, we'd actually be able to reply to users' reviews. We definitely want to roll that out to more users and to more developers in the future as well. All right. So that's it. That's the new developer console. We've had a fantastic team of designers, engineers, testers, localization people, everyone working together to really bring this to you to make it a core part of your business. We're really going to love to hear your feedback as soon as possible. Soon we're going to be recruiting for more developers to try it out, to be among the first to see it. If you'd like to be in the next group, we're going to be soon making a link available in the developer console where you'll be able to sign up. So please do check it out. Let us know what you think. And we really do care. Thank you so much for all you've done to make Google Play great. And we really look forward to bringing you even more over the next year. Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Back to you, Chris.
Thank you. That was great. Thanks. Thank you, Ellie and Miles. I want to do one other brief demo here for you. So just over a year ago, we launched the web version of then Android Market, now Google Play. And one of the novel features that we had at that time was this the ability to purchase an app directly from the website and have it install directly to your device. Since that time, when we've pulled all the content together on Google Play, we've added the section at the top where you can get to your library, so you can see all your music and your books and now your magazines and TV as well. As part of that, we've also revamped the way that you can go in and take a look at all of your Android apps that are installed across a variety of devices. And that last point is actually very important because Android is now getting to a point where users are more frequently have multiple devices. They might have a phone and a tablet or multiple phones, etc. And so now with the new My Applications section here, you can actually go across and look at the apps that have been installed on a variety of your devices. And you also get a view into the apps that are in your library that haven't yet been installed. So think about the scenario where a user has purchased one of your applications, gets a second device, right? There's that kind of awkward period where you gotta, I have to install all the apps and go through and figure out what things I like. It's really easy, particularly for someone like me, who's been on Android for quite a while and has amassed quite a number of apps in their library, to quickly go through here and install those apps to their new devices. You can also delete device applications from your device, and we think it's a great way for users to basically get all of their app story pulled together through the power of the cloud, much like the rest of our content. If we could switch back to the slides now. We're going to take things out here with five top tips for 2012. So things that I would recommend that you spend energy on if you haven't yet. And the first thing we want to start with is this notion of focus on the user. Usability, design, user feedback. At the end of the day, obviously, the goal here is to delight your users and have them have an excellent product experience. And I think users' expectations for mobile applications have gotten fairly high, right? I mean, everybody's sort of raising their game in terms of user experience and app development. And so I think there's a couple things that are worthy to mention here. The first is really making benefit of user reviews. You want to aim to have a great app with great design, great usability, that users are going to rate highly for a couple reasons. One is high ratings in the Google Play Store is every user who rates your app highly is promoting your application to other people who come through the store. And it's an opportunity for you to close those conversions. Also, reviews are a great way to get feedback about issues that you might be having in your applications. I wanted to talk a little bit about what we mean when we say focus on the user with a case study here from this app called Pocket. Now, Pocket's a cool app that lets you basically clip content from the web or videos or blogs or things like that, and all bring them together in a single unified reading experience. And what Pocket did is they built their application from the ground up on Android. So they make use of the Android framework's share intent so that you can add share content to the Pocket application from all your other Android apps. They also use cloud-to-device messaging, so you can clip things from the web and send a notification to the Pocket app running on the Android device. Basically, everything to kind of have that sort of unique Android experience. And I think when they first started off, and this is probably true for a number of developers early on, it wasn't really apparent what like the best practices for Android apps should look like. Now, with the release of our Android UX guidelines and design guidelines, we make that much easier. So I'd encourage you to take a look at the UX and design guidelines. And there's a few other things you could consider doing here. Do beta tests. Reach out to users. Maybe have a usability study of your application. Think hard about all the things you can do to deliver a compelling experience to your users. So the next thing, obviously, we've been talking a lot about is localization. Think about what are the different regions that I want to take my app to, and think about the global marketplace that's available there and how you can reach it. Maybe you start with just localizing your Google Play store listing, or maybe eventually engage with a professional translation firm, or take advantage of the auto-translation feature that we heard about. Now, localization is takes many forms. One case study we want to talk about here is Foursquare. So Foursquare, as you know, it's a local app where people can check in at various venues, etc. And one thing that they noticed is that they started to have growth outside of the U.S. In an interesting way. they had users that were actually helping to build out their location database for them, predominantly started with native English speakers who were abroad. But by building out their location database for them, these users were really helping them grow and provide a compelling experience to users outside of the U.S. So they incentivized that by giving badges to these super users to encourage this sort of behavior. And then they did an analysis of the places where the greatest amount of activity was happening, and they then localized their application into a dozen languages to target those different markets. And the result of that is now fully 50% of their user base is now outside of the U.S. So that's a way for you to, you know, think about ways to sort of get your app available into different markets. The third thing to talk about here is making your app look great on tablets. A lot of Android tablets are going to be sold this year, particularly around the holiday season, and we think that we've just released a killer one with the Nexus 7. So, you know, tablet users don't just want a exploded up version of a phone application. So think about how you can make your applications tablet optimized and deliver a really compelling experience on tablets. A case study I want to get into here is from Mint.com that I think you know, did a really excellent job of this. So what Mint does, so they use the Android Fragments APIs fairly extensively. And so they have an application that adapts itself dynamically to phones and tablets. They've done actually both 7-inch and 10-inch optimized versions of their application on tablets. And using the Fragments API and actually adapting their 10-inch tablet layout to support 7-inch tablets, something they got done in under a week. The other thing they noticed, however, is that the usage patterns of their applications varied significantly between phones and tablets. So what Mint saw is that on phones, they would see kind of peak usage around midday, maybe like around lunchtime or something like that. But the duration of those sessions were fairly short. You know, people would maybe just go in and, you know, check their bills or check their balances or something like that. But tablet users would peak much later in the day, in the evening time or after dinner, and those sessions lasted much longer, and those users were much more engaged with their devices. And so the way Mint put that information to use for them is in their tablet versions of their applications, they actually have added new features there that aren't present on the phone to enable users to, you know, engage with their budget and do more things in the mode where they're kind of willing to more deeply engage there. So the other thing that you can do here is actually Mint added tablet screenshots to the Play Store to promote the fact that they have this sort of premium experience on tablets. So think hard about how to reach tablet users and the things that you can do to deliver an experience to them that really leverages, you know, the capabilities of their device rather than giving them just a translated phone experience. Number four here is revenue model. You know, think creatively and figure out what's the best revenue model for my application. As we talked about a couple times here, there's a variety of different models here. You know, if you look at the sort of top grossing charts in the Google Play Store, a lot of those apps are freemium apps, right? Free apps that sell in-app purchases, but not all of them are. So, you know, there's no sort of one-size-fits-all model for success. So, you know, maybe if you haven't considered this in a while, it's time to think if there's a different way to monetize your apps. An example here is from the folks at Cellfish, C-E-L-L, Fish, see what they did there? They sell these live wallpapers, and they license things from, you know, movies and sports teams and things like that. And when they started out, they had a paid app version of their live wallpaper that they sold. But they decided to try a different tack. And so what they did is they offered a free version of their app that only offered some, you know, sort of generic NFL branding. And then from within the application, they enabled people to purchase, you know, custom versions for their favorite sports teams and things like that. They also went a step further, and they offered packages. So you could maybe get the live wallpaper, as well as a ringtone or theme or something else as a bundle. It's like, well, just another dollar more for the upsell, and you get this package deal. And they've had great success with this model. The other thing that they did, which is something that we've mentioned earlier as well, is keeping their content fresh. So they've done like seasonal customizations, you know, around the holiday times and things like that. And when the Giants won the Super Bowl, they actually had confetti flying in the live wallpaper just a few minutes after the end of the game. So, you know, think about how could in-app or maybe, you know, something like subscriptions work for your application, and figure out if there's, you know, some creative ways you can reconsider your business models if you haven't really given that a look in a while. So the final thing we want to talk about today in terms of our tips is investing in analytics and marketing. We talked a lot about, you know, Google Analytics and the sort of insights that it gives you. And once you've made the investment to build a really compelling application experience, you know, you want to, like, tell the world about it. You want to invest in marketing and promotion to get it out there. And you can think creatively. There's a variety of different ways to do that. So I want to talk here about a case study with Smule. So their marketing is not terribly traditional. They make these really cool apps like Magic Piano and Songify that use your phone in creative ways that are musical in nature. And so because their apps are so musical, video is a really effective way for them to get their point across. And so it turns out that, you know, they get a lot of engagement from video ads as well as YouTube channels. They partnered with some of these YouTube superstars to, you know, focus on use either their products in their videos or do videos about using their products. And they found some interesting thing when they combined that marketing and promotion with analytics. What they saw is that users who acquired the app through this Jimmy Wong video on YouTube, once they actually had the app, were twice as engaged with the app and used it a lot more than other users. And when they took a look at this, they found that the reason was that in the video, it was actually very good at explaining how to use the application. And so they got a whole nother level of insight there on not only how am I doing a conversion, how am I getting a customer to acquire my application, but how am I also using these channels to get customers who are more engaged with my app and actually have a better understanding of the value that they're getting as well. So in summary, focus on the user, localize your apps, make it look great on tablets, find your revenue model, use any of the variety of ways that we have to monetize your app, and make sure that you invest in analytics and marketing. So with that, once again, I started with a thank you. I'm going to end with a thank you. Thank you very much for your attention and for all your hard work.